Welcome to an abbreviated After Hours with me, Rick Kogan. My guest for this entire hour is the one and only Tony Fitzpatrick. Also with Tony is one of his proteges and one of my young friends, Danny Torres, who's an incredibly talented artist. We're talking about a couple things that Tony has upcoming, but I want to go back a while. Because Tony and I have known each other since...
Oh, my God.
I know. I'm telling you when. Since 1981, when we met at a memorial service for Nelson Algren at Second City.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Tony was kind of, frankly, a bum at the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, real bum at the time.
You know, card carrying. If they gave out cards, I'd have had
He's
one.
Also, Tony does not drink, but he has somehow found a water drink called Liquid Death
yeah.
that he's sipping here, which I think
I'm going to do some packaging for them.
What do you mean?
They took one look at my work and thought, hey, you know,
he's perfect.
Kind of perfect for us. Yeah.
Perfect for it.
Yeah.
Tony and I had a lot of wild times when we were younger, and I have written about him plenty, and he has been on my show plenty and been on a lot of shows plenty. I got to ask you, Tony, you were such a city kid.
Yeah.
Though you grew up not in the city.
Not at all. Not at all. Villa Park and Lombard, you know.
I credit your dad.
Absolutely.
For that. How did he do it?
I'll tell you what, he, you know, I spent a lot of time getting kicked out of school. And
surprise, you know, surprise.
Yeah, and I would go to work with him. And the first, you know, few hours, he'd be mad at me. You know, getting booted from school.
Getting the trunk.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to ride in the
getting
trunk.
Get the trunk, yeah. And then his need to tell stories would take over.
What was he
Every
doing?
Every neighborhood. He sold burial vaults.
Yeah.
He would go from funeral home to funeral home. And he covered the whole Chicagoland
sure.
area. At that time, he worked for Wilbert Burial Vault. And later on, he worked for Sterling KL, which is up in the northwest suburbs. And he really knew the city. You know, he estimated one time to me that he'd probably driven close to 1 million miles in the city of Chicago.
Wow.
Over 45 years of doing that.
See, that's a rare thing. You know, nobody, very few people get to see the whole city. Cops have their
Absolutely.
Beats. Taxi drivers won't drive certain places.
And not just there. I mean, he,
yeah.
you know, the northern suburbs, the western suburbs. That he had, you know, he had a route. He pretty much covered everybody.
He made you or compelled you to fall in love with the city
Absolutely.
Of Chicago.
Absolutely.
Where did he grow up?
He grew up on the south side of Chicago. It's 72nd Damon.
He made you a Cubs fan.
He made me a Sox fan. And he said he never referred to it as the south side of Chicago. He always referred to it as the great south side of
Did
Chicago.
Did he really? Interesting.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
And he grudgingly became a Bears fan when the Cardinals left
yeah.
for St. Louis yeah. Yeah. in 1959. But what was weird is that he had a story for every part of the city. And it was like the city was one huge house, and every day he showed me a different room.
How often were you in trouble? I mean,
very often. Very often. You know, the four that grew up behind me
yeah.
were so grateful because they could have burned down the convent and come home and been reasonably assured that I had done something worse.
We know? Are talking this entire hour with my friend Tony Fitzpatrick, who has a show coming up.
Next Friday night?
I don't want to talk about the show yet. I want to talk more
either.
About your life. And Danny, whenever you feel like there's stuff you don't know about Tony, you're now in business together.
Yep. Yeah, he's my partner in our public art company, Humboldt Caballo.
And this is the other thing about Tony. Tony has been, I met him as a, as I said, as a bum.
Bum.
As a bum who drank.
Reprobate.
Who drank too much and made these weird
And
drawings.
You drank with me.
Well, I don't
add that.
I don't dispute that. I don't dispute that. I thought, oh, here's a young man I can train.
Exactly.
Here's
exactly.
a young man I can train.
Here's a mind I can mold. You
well,
know?
I would love to tell the story of the night we went to.
Le Cage?
No, it's called Huckleberry's. Yeah.
Is that the joint?
Yes, we cannot tell that story.
No,
we cannot tell that story on the air.
Not in hope to keep both of our jobs.
Tony's been on the radio a lot, too. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about his movie career. We'll talk about his acting career and his writing career. He has basically done it all. Danny, in a way, Tony's varied career is obviously some sort of inspiration to you, is it not? Talk in the mic.
Oh, sorry.
You will not. You will never have your own radio show unless you talk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I like how free he is because I went to the whole gamut of art school, and they teach you how to do the thing and how not to do the thing. And Tony didn't do that. He went his own way.
They teach you everything except how to make a living, well, how to feed yourself.
I mean that as well, but he has no rules, and that's exactly the kind of friend I needed as I entered my own professional life.
Well put. We got to take a little commercial break, and we'll be back in a couple minutes with Tony Fitzpatrick and company. Welcome back. We're listening to Tony Fitzpatrick talk off the air, but it's always valuable to listen to him talk off the air.
And he never shuts up.
He always, you know, what do you mean he doesn't shut up? Let me ask you, we hear a wonderful thing from your pal and business partner and in many ways protege, Danny Torres, about your influence on him. When did art get you, Tony? When did it grab
you? I'm glad you asked me that because I just finished a piece yesterday, and I put in it for the date. I put circa 1964, and that is honestly when I wanted to be a cartoonist. You know, I started looking at the Chester Gould, Dick Tracy, Gasoline Alley.
What about
Harold Gray?
Mad Magazine.
Absolutely, it set me free. It's like these guys are wise asses. They're getting away with it, and they're getting paid for it.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I was watching all of the cartoons, and something very unique happened with the televised cartoons. There were still a lot of the old Freleng studio, like Felix the Cat and stuff, that were all in black and white. And then, you know, Hanna-Barbera, the Jetsons, the Flintstones, and Looney Tunes. And you would notice that they had a great deal of subversion in them.
And that's what appealed to you.
Much of it. I mean, oftentimes I get kicked out of school, so I'd go home and watch cartoons. And I began to think, this is what I'd like to do. And I didn't distinguish between comics and the cartoons. I just thought of them as oddly as part of the same thing.
Were you immediately any good at it?
I had to learn it.
From?
You know those books you buy at the paint store?
Yeah.
Cartooning for beginners?
Really? Yeah, that's how you learned? Those.
Yeah, and watched a lot of guys who did comics when I was a little bit older. The problem with comics is that I didn't have the attention span for sequential art.
You could just draw a comic
Absolutely.
Character you know, without a story.
Yeah, I just read a great comic graphic novel by a marvelous artist named Jim Terry. Called Come Home Indio. Just one of the best graphic novel I've ever read, one of the best books I've ever read.
Wow.
Because at its heart, it's about recovery, and it's also about identity in a very real way. Jim's father was an Irish jazz player, and his mom was Native, and He would always naggingly ask himself this question, where do I belong?
Mm.
And then finally, with recovery and stuff, he figured out, wherever I am. And that landed for me. Danny got me that book. And found me at a very good time in my life, so I'm happy about it. But early on,
I'm assuming you've got, you know, did some bad things in high school, too, and maybe...
Oh, no idea.
You went to college for a time, didn't you?
I went to College DuPage for a little while.
Why?
You know? I wanted to act. I wanted to learn about acting. I also wanted to take some drawing classes and become a better draftsman.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went for two semesters, and then... just found myself
a little longer than I did. Yeah,
yeah. Found myself kind of bored by it, even though they did a great job. I mean,
I'm very fond
of that institution. When I gift a bunch of my work, it will be to that museum.
So
I am so fond of both Justin Witte and Diana Martinez. They've done a remarkable job of bringing culture to that part of the
having
world.
Never met your dad, sadly, but knowing your mom, these were, from everything I know, very nurturing people. They would have said to
my mother was. Yeah, my father.
And maybe I not was, so nurturing.
No,
yeah.
my dad.
But he was.
He was, actually.
He was.
My father, what I learned from him was not to quit. You know, I remember the day I told him I was going to be an artist and nothing else.
Threw you out of the car.
He pulled the car over and he goes,
"Get out."
And he goes, "Not one step backwards."
He didn't, I mean, he wanted you to have a career, a job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He kept saying, "This can be your avocation." That was his favorite word.
This can be your hobby.
Avocation. I said to him, hobbies are for jagbags. You know, I do not need a hobby. What I need is a calling. And
did you finally get it. Did you think at all you could make money? I mean, that's one of the interests. Yeah, of course not.
You know what? You know what? When I got sober, I got a job tending bar. For a marvelous guy named Mike Brennan, who owned a bar on just off Philly Avenue in Villa Park called Brennan's. And you know his brother. His brother's Lenny Pincus, Pat Brennan.
Oh, sure, sure.
And Mike was kind of like a big brother to me in that I would take these trips to New York and try to find some foothold in the art world there. And He was all for me. You know, I owe it to the guy.
Did you feel, did you sense, you did not have, a la Danny Torres, a mentor like you. Did you, it must have been awfully frustrating at first, Tony,
In the beginning.
Especially the gallery scene.
Oh, yeah, I did not speak that language at all. But something, I didn't know how to put a name to it, but I remember reading in Bob Dylan's autobiography.
Chronicles.
Yeah, Chronicles. And he said, I was standing on Bleecker Street, and I saw Destiny, and Destiny was only looking at me. And I didn't have that dramatic of a thing.
Yes.
But I also thought, most of the guys I knew who were doing what I was doing, they had worked out a plan B. I never thought about it.
Yeah.
Not once.
Yeah.
It was this or nothing, you know.
Well, you knew, though, that you could go home, that your mom would take you in.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
That was always a fallback
thing. Oh, after my horrible car accident,
I remember getting that phone call.
Yeah, that's when you and my dad spoke on the phone.
Correct, correct.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, my mother...
Was it the car crash that changed the route of your life? That's when you stopped.
Absolutely. I had to think. I thought I have to get serious. And
how old were you when you got the car crash?
Oh God, I was 21, 22.
Yeah. And
it was in 1981.
It was bad.
Yeah.
It was a bad crash.
I was in the hospital for a long time.
It was right after we had met, right after Wilson Algren died.
That was a bad year for everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, for you and Nelson,
but
certainly.
Boy, my mom was just a champ. You know, I mean, I was a 23-year-old busboy. You know, I mean, she would take me to the art store, buy me art supplies, and it's like, all my other friends had cars. They were getting married. They were, and
they'd gone to college.
Yeah, exactly.
But she had faith in you, and that faith.
Yeah, she did.
Was one of the great, I think, one of the great foundations of your manhood.
A good mother will get you far.
Hmm? Yep.
A good mother will get you far.
You know that too. You know.
I got in a car wreck from a DUI, roughly the same age as well. So that's strange.
No. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, you just heard the perfect route to becoming a famous artist. Do you remember?
No, I remember getting my first show in New York, and I remember thinking.
What is the first piece you ever sold, and who'd you sell it to? You've got to remember.
I sold two pieces, three pieces actually, to Keith Haring.
And how did that happen? The famous artist.
I was sitting in Washington Square, and my friend Danny Laborer. Lived in New York then, and he was one of those spray can guys. He made some interesting things, and he said, "Go down to Washington Square, sit by the fountain, line your stuff up, and people Sorry about that. People will at least take a look. He goes, I've never gone a whole day without selling something.
Wow.
You know, so I was making the slate drawings. I mean,
yeah,
remember these.
Sure.
We used to meet for lunch once in a while, and I'd show them to you. And I had four or five of them out. And this kid comes bopping up, and he's got a crew cut and the really cool glasses. And he's, like, way hipper than me. And at that time, I would never describe you in those days as hip.
No,
I had the, I had the biker jacket, long hair. Yeah, I never shaved.
Yeah,
you know?
I know.
And he goes, what do you want for these? And honestly, till that moment, I'd never really even thought about it.
Put a price,
know?
Sure.
So I decided to swing for the fence. I go, $50. And he goes, all right, I want those three. So he gives me $150 in 50s. Now listen, like 3 days earlier, the girl I chased out there kissed me off the minute I got to New York.
Yeah.
You're not
hip enough for this town. No,
she said, I've met someone, you know, a sports writer. I've hated them ever since. And but I decided I'm here, you know, but I was down to about $40 and I had about 3 or 4 days left in New York.
Yeah.
And I figured, well, I can take, you know, the subway to Port Authority and take a bus to back to the airport. And so I'm wrapping his drawings up with this new invention called bubble wrap. That's how long ago this was. This is 85. And he says to me, he says, are you going to be here tomorrow? I go, yeah, you're coming back.
Yeah, if you have any more money,
exactly,
I'll be here.
Yeah. And he goes, I want to bring a friend of mine with me, you know, so the next day, I'm back, and sure enough, he comes back with possibly the coolest guy I've ever seen in my life. It's this young black guy. He's got the short braids. He's smoking a joint walking through Washington Square. Now, look, Rick.
Not unusual.
There are cops everywhere.
Yeah, sure.
You know? And he's just smoking a joint, and it's like, can't see me, you know, I mean.
Was he wearing shoes? Because he didn't.
No, he was not. He was not.
What was his name?
Jean-Michel Basquiat.
That ends the first half hour with Tony Fitzpatrick. We'll be back in a few minutes. We could sit here and talk for 8 days, frankly, but stay tuned, please. Welcome back. I'm on the air with Tony Fitzpatrick and Danny Torres, two of Chicago's leading artists. Tony has a show opening Friday at the Chicago Printmakers Collaborative at 4912 Northwestern Avenue. Go to chicagoprintmakers.com to get all the information. Here's the information that Tony sent me via an email, and I think it's really wonderful. Tony has self-promotional instincts, but they are not overwhelming by any stretch of contemporary life. He writes, this show is 3 decades of my etchings. It's special to me. I've always thought of this work as who I am. The one-of-a-kind work is what I've learned. The etchings are what I am. The subjects go all the way back to childhood and are kind of a shadow autobiography. We whittled it down to 66 pieces of the more than 450 that he has made. They are darker, sadder, but also more replete with joy. If that doesn't intrigue you enough to get to the Chicago Printmakers Collaborative, I don't know what is.
Maybe the free wine will.
Well, anybody who goes to an art show for free wine is nuts. Or bring your checkbook if you're going.
Well, you know,
for
my wife has a wine store, so
I can buy the wine.
Yeah.
What's the website for Michelle's wine store?
It's Door 24.
Door 24.
Oh, she's going to kill me. I don't know what the website address is.
Well, this is why Danny's here. He'll look up the website. We're a full-service radio show here.
Yeah, it's at 2124 North Damon, which used to be my studio.
One of the things about both of you, and Tony, especially you have always been determined to kind of spread your wings. I mean, I'm not even talking about the jigsaw puzzles that you made and the you became an actor.
Yeah.
What drew you to that? I know you were thinking about it while you were becoming
You know what? Going to see
an artist.
Going to see a play at what was then called, it was Steppenwolf before, St. Nicholas.
Yeah, sure.
Balm and Gilead.
Yeah.
And it landed for me. And
oh,
then
bad.
Seeing Billy Peterson do In the Belly of the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
And the night I
went.
The old
Wisdom Bridge, yeah.
Yeah, the night I went, he banged his head on the table so hard, I swear to God, he passed out.
He did
and
that,
years
he
later.
He did that every night.
Yeah. Years later, I said to him, I swore you passed out that night. He goes, which night? I passed out a few nights.
Yeah. You know.
And I just thought, you know, there is something really naked and vulnerable about being able to take on another skin.
So you wanted.
And not imitate, but to embody.
In essence, you wanted to explore yourself by exploring
absolutely.
Other characters on stage.
Absolutely.
Right?
I mean, the closest they've ever gotten to me was Jack Birdbath in Patriot.
Yeah. If you have not seen Patriot on, I can't remember which streaming service it's on.
Amazon.
It's on Amazon. That's fine.
And Amazon really Prime.
Tony was a guard. Tony was a sort of weird
I was a security guard and a disgraced former policeman.
Yeah.
And,
You've done a lot of, I mean, I saw you, I was rewatching not The Fugitive, that weird movie with Richard Gere and
Primal Fear.
Yeah, Primal Fear, where you're like a cop sitting in the
Cardinal's house or something. Reading a magazine, you know.
I was watching a movie called Gladiator, and I had no
I'm
idea.
In that. Yeah.
I had no idea Tony was in it.
You're going to do something soon, aren't you? You're in something soon. You're in like in Game of Thrones or something, right?
Steve Conrad is working on that with George R. R. Martin right now.
He's talented writer director. Made Patriot.
Conrad's amazing. I mean, he's
and
just,
he must think highly of you too.
You know, he, when I read Birdbath, I thought, you know, they're going to show this to John Goodman or somebody. And the funny thing is, I saw Goodman in New Orleans not long after that. And he goes, you're so lucky that, you know, they didn't send that to my agent first, you know. But I've known since the Neville's cover. You know?
Yeah, sure.
I met him there.
Yeah, the Neville Brothers album.
He's big friends with the Neville's. And
do you ever think, Tony, and I've ever been curious about this, that you have wound up really spreading your creative wings? And Danny, think about this too. You're a visual artist, you're an actor, you're a very talented writer, as I've told you. He wrote columns for New City, among many things. He has published all manner of books. He has yet to, in my mind, tackle a novel. You've been a radio host.
That's in the works, the novel.
Am I in it? I'm going to sue you.
Believe me, there's a lot of you in it, you know.
Do you ever think to yourself that you're spreading your creative wings too wide?
Too thin? No, because you know what? I've been avoiding honest work for 40 years, and I work for myself. Nobody hands me a paycheck every week. I got to go hustle and get it. I sell my work, and you know, social media was like the perfect thing. I put my stuff up for sale on Facebook, on Instagram, and, you know, at least once a week somebody gets something.
I thought the interesting thing was, and you too, Danny, and Danny's part of a new business with Tony, but the jigsaw puzzles were, and I've written about much of this stuff, were just a fascinating outgrowth of. I didn't think you were spreading yourself thin. I thought you were exploding with creativity.
Yeah, we've not made one in over a year. We've not made a new one in over a year because of the pandemic.
Yeah, it was a pandemic thing.
Yeah, people started going outside again, thankfully. And I'll be real selective about making those in the future.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I still make posters. I make totes. And people like them, you know.
There are now Tony Fitzpatrick products. I mean, you could basically live your life. Live a Tony Fitzpatrick life by buying stuff.
Exactly, you poor thing, you know. but I wanted, I also wanted to send that message out there to other artists that any way you can get your work out there in front of people, as long as you don't embarrass yourself and do stupid stuff, you know?
Talk to me for a second, Danny, about how you came to collaborate with Tony on your public art. I'm going to call it a public art company.
We have a public art company.
Tony got a heart attack, and he was nursed by my aunt.
Your aunt.
My aunt.
Yeah. Rosa.
She would tell him about my work. I was in graduate school at the
this
time.
This is great. She called me up one day and she goes, Tony, this is Rosa, who restored you to life. And she told me about Danny. Danny came in. He brought 17, 18 paintings. And I looked at him. And he was at a crossroads. Should I become a professional boxer or a visual artist?
No, I wanted to... I like to box for fun, but I wanted to be a illustrator. That's what I was trained for.
Right, right, right.
And I ended up becoming a fine artist.
I hooked him out of, you know, honest employment.
One of the first, you did an installation. He helped with the installation at Steppenwolf.
Absolutely. He digitized every square inch of it.
And then your own work is at that cool building.
448 North LaSalle.
Wow. Which is, you can go in the lobby and take a look at it. It's a public building.
The guys who run that building, the two guys who own it.
Yeah, no kidding. Who I've met.
Javers and Charlie Javers, his son, they look at that as an ongoing project.
Yep.
We're going to curate every floor of that building because he honestly thinks that the building is tantamount to a work of art. It's like
it's a beautiful building.
Miniature. Yeah. You know,
it's a beautiful. It's right across the street from what used to be Michael Jordan's massive restaurant on LaSalle Street.
We did the.
What's the name of your company, guys?
Humboldt Caballo.
Humboldt Caballo.
Which means
spell it for people.
Humboldt Horse. That's what it means.
Spell it. Humble Horse. Yeah, Humboldt spell horse. It for people.
Humboldt. H-U-M-B-O. LDT and Caballo, CABALLO. Yep.
We have no website. I don't know why we're telling people.
See, you guys are the worst self-promoters ever. We'll take a little break, come back, and finish up. Never enough time with Tony. But again, go to ChicagoPrintmakers.com about his show that starts Friday and runs through November 5th. We'll be right back. Well, the art show of the season is certainly Tony Fitzpatrick's The Years, Three Decades of Etching. It is his work covering three decades from the earliest days of his now burgeoning careers at the Chicago Printmakers Collaborative. You can go to ChicagoPrintmakers.com to get all sorts of information. It opens Friday. Danny Torres is here. You will be at the opening, will you not?
Oh, yeah.
And neither of you guys drink, so there'll be more free wine for others.
Absolutely.
Others there.
Gabby will probably be pouring it.
Your daughter?
Yes, daughter.
It's worth going to see.
Absolutely.
Gabby. I've known them since.
She's got something to say.
Gabby,
always.
Yes, she does. Oh, just like
you know, there are also two other really great shows in Chicago right now. One, Paloma Treco, which is called Paloma Shaloma, at the Dime.
Mm-hmm. And where's the Dime?
It's at 1513 Northwestern Avenue, sir. Plenty of parking.
Yes.
That's what you say when you're in a really dicey neighborhood. Plenty of parking. But her work is dicey these days. Yeah, no kidding. Her work is really inspired by jazz. She was raised by an ethnomusicologist, and she is Mexican, Jewish, Canadian. You know, she lived in Montreal, New Orleans, Chicago, you name it.
Wow.
Mexico. But it's a fascinating. She's one of my heroes as a collagist. She was in the show Bop that I curated in New York.
Oh.
And I think so much of her, I turned the curatorial duty for Bop going forward over to her.
Wow.
Yeah, I honestly think that, you know, you don't need any more 63-year-old white guys deciding what's au courant in art form.
Actually, yes, you do, because age is not a deterrent to...
No, I know, but I wanted to make it...
good for you.
Ecumenical, and I wanted to make it... I also wanted to have female curators, which are a rarity.
Really a rarity.
Also, next Thursday night at Povo's Gallery, 2000 North Milwaukee Avenue, Ashkan Haidari opens. This young man I have known since he was a kid.
Me too.
And he worked for
you. Yeah.
He worked for me for 5 years. And, you know, his paintings, if you take Persian art, Picasso, George Kondo, rap music, skate culture, throw them all in the blender. When they come out, it's something like what Ashkan does, but there's so much of him and there's so much heart in it. I am endlessly proud of him.
You have, Tony, you have a real reputation, well-deserved, as a mentor now. Danny Torres being one of your mentees, as they say.
Yeah, but I teach him all the bad habits, too. So there's a balance.
Yeah, it's so strange to be around two people who don't drink. This reminds me of when my mother stopped drinking. That's very
important. Did it improve her mood?
Rarely.
Did it help her balance?
Rarely. I've known a lot of people who stopped drinking.
The first 10 words at every AA meeting in Chicago is, "My name is Jack. I'm an alcoholic." You know, it all started as drinking down at Ricardo's with that Kogan guy. And I tried to keep up with him, and that's when everything went to hell.
The good old newspaper days. What do you guys, so what's the future for your endeavor?
We have some public projects coming up. I mean, we're looking at one for New York.
Oh, fantastic.
Which is, you know those pieces I posted, the Angels of New York City?
Oh, yeah.
They're all silhouettes of women, and when my mom was alive, they were her. And now they're kind of Gabby, you know?
Oh, that's great.
So we're talking to a bigger company out there. We can't really divulge it
no,
yet.
No, that's
it'll
fine.
Probably be the side of a building on the Lower East Side.
Oh.
And it'll be five panels. And we'll do it with the ceramic tile.
Are we going to work with Imola?
Oh, yeah. Ceramica Imola, the guys who did the ceramic tiles for
Steppenwolf
from Bologna. And they have an office right here on Michigan Avenue, and they're fascinating guys.
Well,
they are the future of street art.
Well, there should be more street art because street
art
elevates any
it's gallery
city.
For the people.
Yeah, there's a guy
that's exactly
doing amazing stuff right now, Joe Centroc Perez, who does these incredible murals all over the city.
He's got an opening at the Elmhurst Museum, right?
He's got an opening at the Elmhurst Museum.
It just happened this
I think
weekend.
Really soon. Yeah.
Just opened.
Like yesterday, mm-hmm. probably. Yeah.
Like, Danny, are you doing work of your own?
Right now I have a handful of commissions I got to get done.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's good. I'm happy. And then as soon as I'm free of that, I'm going to focus on my next solo show. So.
Well, we are doing a show based on Batman.
Yeah, at the end of October.
Going back to the early comic days of Tony Fitzpatrick the Child.
No, it's more like Danny Torres, who's whole wardrobe consists of nothing but Batman t-shirts. Today he decided to be,
Spider-Man.
Counterintuitive.
Yes, well, he was coming on the show and he wanted to dress up for the radio.
But yeah, the Batman is going to open right before Halloween weekend. We're going to have fun. The Dime, man.
Where else? And then
exactly.
next year, Peter Bella will have his photography.
Absolutely. The great Peter Bella.
You guys, Tony, you know how much I admire you. I've known you since 1981.
Hey, you've been one of my best friends
for more than
half a century.
Half my life.
It's
unbelievable.
Scary. Half a century.
It is scary. Danny, does it scare you at all?
No, not at all.
Good. It's been great. This show really could have gone on. Tony and I actually could sit here and talk about various health problems that we've had over the last few years, and that would charm.
We should have a show. You and I should do a show together,
and
man.
It should be called,
we both,
1 week it'd be, what's wrong, Tony? And the next week it'll be called, what's wrong, Rick?
What's up with Rick? I mean? And we're relatively safe because we both know where the bodies are buried.
Yes.
We could blackmail each other.
I would use the phrase relatively safe. Guys, thank you for doing this. Thanks for coming
Thanks
in.
Thanks for having us, man.
Thank you, folks out there, for listening. And I'll talk to you next week. Be safe out there.